Welcome back to Never Settle. This is your host, Sarah Chiricconi. Today, I am thrilled and honored a fellow multi-hyphenate creative, which I can't wait to get into this, Luciana Fallhaber. We are going to talk about everything on the creative spectrum, but also, I mean, just breaking down every single barrier for the categories that we need to fit into. So I'm thrilled to be here. And if we can just kick it off, I would love for you to share a little bit about yourself and what you do in the multi-hyphenated way.
Of course. I feel like I've had so many lives, you know, if you think about all the things you try over the period of a lifetime. I'm curious. I'm always interested in trying new things. I started really studying biology, then I went to research, then I was a teacher, and then I started to study politics, then I tried to work on that field and I didn't like it, then I decided I wanted to be an actress. In reality, like, growing up in Brazil in not an advantageous family, being an artist was not a choice. So it was always like, oh, when you have a good grades, you can do this as a hobby. Or, you know, once I got into college, then you have all the dream team and the drama club and all that stuff, you know, that you could do. I was like, great, this is also a hobby. And then once, like, I got married out of college, and, you know, my ex-husband also treated it as a hobby. And I kind of got used to it. But once I tried everything else that I thought I might be interested in, I realized, no, this is really it, and there's no running from it. So I became an actor. I went to acting school. I studied with Bill Esper in New York. And it was a really wonderful, life-changing experience. And then I realized everything that was being made at the time was not things that I really wanted to be a part of. Obviously, as an actor, you all just want to job, whatever it is, you know. But I realized, like, as a Latina woman in a time where diversity wasn't really celebrated, I was going for parts as, like, drug dealer's wife or, like, baby mama or a maid. And there's a lot of, obviously, I believe there's a lot of respect for professions of any kind. But when you are segregating people by their stereotypes, I think it's also a form of oppression, considering what our television reaches are today and always been in households all over the world. So I decided, you know what? I'm going to create some other stuff. I'm going to start creating things that I'm proud of, that in the ways that I wanted to be portrayed. And I went on this journey of writing, directing, producing. It's been really a journey. And, you know, I always joke that Latinos are always portrayed as, it's like, you know, drug dealers, you know, kind of people. And I lived in New York a long time, and I was like, all the drug dealers I met were all white guys. So it's just funny to me that, like, that's still a stereotype that is so outdated, but that's just kind of how the industry works. And I set out to change things.
That's so powerful. And, you know, you saw the opportunity of, this isn't what this is being portrayed in a way that is not in entirety. It was very stereotypical, as you said, and wanting to make a change from that. It's, you know, I'm currently working on a project now, and somebody asked me, well, why did you create this? It's a planner. And I said, because I didn't have anything that really resonated for me that I wanted to use. So instead of trying to fit into something that was already done, I wanted to create something. That's exactly what you did. And it's so empowering. I want to talk a little bit more, because it's something that personally resonates for me, and I'm sure other artists out there, or anybody who's looking to really follow their passion, where it's called a hobby, you know. And that's kind of, thank you, society, for putting that in our mindset as to, you know, this is a hobby. That's cute. However, when are you going to get a real job?
And
that phrase, I was going to say, I know this is going to resonate with her. How did you decide to quiet that voice, but listen deeper to your intuition? Was there a moment that created that for you?
I think I've always had it as a child, you know. You put up with, as a child, with things your parents tell you because you need to survive it. So when my parents would say, you know, it's a hobby, I would like, okay, sure, whatever. I'll go with it, but then I'll give it my all. You know, I would love that time that I had, how long I had that artistic endeavor given to me. And one thing my mother used to say a lot was that arts were for the rich. And I was talking about this last night with a friend, and, you know, we were both in agreement. I mean, years later, in a different country, we sat and had dinner, and we talked about how many, you know, industry babies are the children of either very wealthy people or people who've been in the industry for decades. So there is validity to that, and I'm grateful for my mother for preparing me for that in a way, I would say. But sometimes you just can't fight what you love.
Well, I'm writing this down, that phrase, arts are for the rich, because it's very powerful, yet it's quite ironic because it's also the phrase a starving artist. You know, there's starving artists and then arts are for the rich, and both are so true. It's where even up until recently, wellness was a trend as a luxury, you know, coaching, healthy foods, that was a luxury as opposed to what we now deem as necessity. So it's very, I love that phrase because
yeah,
there's so much money in the arts, and it's really arts that drives our heart and fuel as a world. And I had this conversation recently with my husband, and I said, you know, with art, look what we did during the pandemic. We were right. Watching things for entertainment. We were connecting through what were the arts, because it's what kept our hopes, our positivity, what kept us going when we were disconnected in every other way. And so it's a very powerful stand for you to just move past that limiting belief, because would you agree as well, phrases that others put upon us are their own expectations and limitations they put on themselves in some ways.
But I will say, when I got to LA, I had, you know, a great teacher called Leslie Kahn, which is very famous here, very popular. And one of the first things she said in class was that actors need to be independently wealthy. And, you know, it resonated with what I heard as a child. And I finally understood why that is. It's because it takes such a long time for a career to take off, that unless you are independently wealthy, then you're unable to actually do it. I mean, you can have part-time jobs and do it overnights and keep your life casual and try to not have commitments that would hinder you from, you know, we all know as actors that the moment you book a job, you have to either travel or go somewhere. And it makes it very difficult to have jobs that require you to stay in an office that would allow you to have a sustaining kind of life. So, you know, a lot of actors become, you know, working in the industries that are more flexible, like restaurants and tourism and, you know, all the kind of performing arts in different ways. But they don't really pay that much, right? So then you have kind of capping. And that's the contradiction. You're capping how much money you can make and what kind of a quality of life you can have if you need to have a job. But the independently wealthy are able to live a good quality of life and be in the circles that it's needed to be in this industry and still be available all day long when the opportunity comes. So I definitely understood once I, you know, heard it from a professional in a city like LA, why that was.
It's good to have those reality checks, as I like to think of it as well, because it also grounds what's possible. You know, and it's so true. If there weren't the other entrepreneurial endeavors that I'm doing, or the support around me, or the backing and upbringing that I had prior to, it wouldn't allow me the kind of flexibility that I have. And it's so powerful. I appreciate that you were adding that, because it's a reality. And it's not that you can just wake up and be like, this is going to happen. And this is going to be the day. And I'm just going to, you know, you hear all the stories of, and one day they walked into the restaurant and there it was. And it's like, that can happen. But then there's also the reality of the day to day, what effort you're putting in. Like you yourself, you went to classes. You were showing up. You said, you know, this is what I want to do. I'm going to do this. So aside from, in addition, I should say, to acting, you're also a writer. You're also a director. You do, like we started this, you're a multi-hyphenate. How do you find that, you know, one, doing it all, and two, do they fuel into each other?
100%. I feel like I resisted so much being a producer because there was this thing that I heard. You don't want people looking at you in a different way. You don't want people questioning, what are you? Are you this or are you that? If you're doing all these things, you can't be focused on one thing. Well, if you look at the very successful actors out there, they're all writers now. They're all producers. They're all directors.
So true.
Because otherwise, you're just forever asking for a job. So I think the industry has changed and perception also has changed. The fact that I love actors that are just actors. I mean, good. I'm so happy for you. But that's like 1%. most actors know that that is a shelf life, and once that is done, they have to do something else. And especially actors is a career of appearance. So as you age, you need to be able to continue to work. And as a woman, we know, still in this business, as you age, there is less work for women. So, and then you add, you know, if you're out of color, and then you add your socioeconomical status, and then you add, I mean, when you think about it, you know, in a statistical way, the probability is very slow. So it's very small. So I resisted for a long time. I didn't want to produce. I didn't want to be seen as a producer. And then I started doing it because I needed work, and I wanted work that was flexible. And it was the best thing I did, because the moment I started working on sets, professional sets, even if it's as a producer, my friendships just blossomed. Opportunities came to me. Creativity just multiplied. I mean, now I was in a realm of people who are creative, who are creating different types of art, who I now collaborate with. So it changed everything. And if there's one thing I wished, you know, I would tell, you know, our listeners is do it. Whatever opportunity comes to you that thinks that could kind of connect to what you really want to do, why not? Go see where it leads.
Similar to that end point that you were just sharing, is there anything early on that you regret not doing or doing, either way?
I think listening to people, you know, listening to the rules of the game. Because when you don't know, you listen, right? I was recently last year, we had the strike, the actor strike, and I was walking around one day and this younger actress came by, and I mean younger, she was, you know, I don't know, 40, but she had just arrived in LA. So she was novice, I guess, maybe I should say it that way. And she was like, you know, oh, telling us, I was walking with a professional writer on a television show, and I, you know, now have so much experience. And she, you know, I introduced her and we were walking, and she said something like, oh, I heard that we shouldn't really post about the strike because producers are not going to hire us in the future if they know we supported it. And we both looked at her like, what? Like, everybody's here. What are you talking about? But then it really reminded me of what it was like to arrive in a place like LA without knowing anyone and listening to these urban legends of industry that are just so uneducated because they're from people on the outside. I mean, if you look back, everybody was at the strike and everybody knows about it, and no one really knows who was there either because there are so many people. So it doesn't matter. So when you think about it in that sense, like, I wish I didn't hear it. I think I am very, like headstrong, and I ignored a lot of things. Like, I had managers who were trying to sleep with me tell me, you know, you don't need to know how to direct. You don't need to know the business of acting. You just need to be a good actor and let people like me, you know, run your career. And I'm thinking, oh, people like you who are trying to sleep with me? Cool, this is interesting. So, you know, I've had those experiences as well. And those people who I clearly could tell were ill-intended, it was easy to shut down. But there are people who are your friends and who think they're giving you good advice, and you end up listening because you think, oh, they want the best for me. But one thing I've learned over time is that even the ill, like the good-intended people in your life, all have an agenda, right? They're all either validating their choices, or they're subconsciously trying to keep you where you are because then they have company. I mean, whatever it is, and I don't think it's really intentional or mean in any way. Some people are, of course, there's all sorts of people out there. But I think the good people really are trying to help, but subconsciously they're just kind of using your experience to fulfill whatever, you know, they need. So don't listen. That would be my number one advice.
Wow, there's so much that I would want to delve into from that reply. And I want to also acknowledge, too, I'm sorry that you had that experience with managers in the industry who that was their tie. And it was almost as if like a using. And it's a shame that that is still something that happens. It is a reality and a truth, because we're all human. As you said at the end, it's like everybody has an agenda for something, whether they're... Yeah. Malintended or good intended. And to the other part of, you know, even loved ones close by, it's a personal validation to what they're living. And it's in a way, how you're saying, is subconscious, where it's their survival mechanism to say, you're okay, you're doing it okay. So it's so powerful. And I also want to mention to listeners as well and viewers on your podcast, how much you tap into with the mental health aspect And it's just, it's a powerful, because when you interviewed me, we both said we can continue on with this conversation for a long time to come. So you talk a lot on the deeper levels of the human psyche on your podcast as well. I want to add to this part, within the not listening to people, what would you say was the most challenging part in your life thus far, and how it adds to the creator that you are today?
Yeah, I mean, survival, right? Back to money. Like, if you don't have unlimited wealth, like, you have to survive somehow. So that's, I think, for any creator who doesn't come from a family that can support them or who is a creative family, that's the hard part. How do you keep doing your art? How do you keep fighting for the thing that you want and still survive, right? How do you... And then you have to make choices. Like, do you make more money, less money? Do you live smaller? Do you, you know, how do you conciliate those things? It's a very small fraction of people. And I have some friends that have great jobs. They work from home and they make six figures that allows them to be flexible, but at the same time be actors. I mean, that's the dream, right? I haven't found one of those jobs yet, but like, that's the only way I've seen people who didn't come from wealth really have a growing life at the same time that they have a growing career.
Would you have any suggestions for what someone could do or look for to be able to pursue their artistic endeavors and pleasures, but still look to have that bit of flexibility and financial freedom in some way?
I would say be creative, you know, see what opportunities are out there. Try things out as they come to you. Production work can pay well. It is very hard work. So if you're not somebody who likes working, don't do it. The producing job, I mean, you're the first one in, the last one out. You're exhausted all the time. I mean, directing especially, like, there are times that I'm directing, I don't sleep the entire time I'm directing. Depending on the size of the crew and the responsibility and where we're at. I mean, the last thing I shot in the snow, I didn't sleep for 7 days. Like, you could see, I would try to sleep, but then it would be like, this thing is not taken care of. Like, I need to take care of whatever, and this hasn't been done, and where are the people? Is everybody warm? Like, those are things that I can't turn off. So I know some of it is a responsibility of a producer, but I can't be on a set when my people are not being fed, where everybody's cold, or people are waiting for me. Like, those are things that I treat people on set at a certain level. But I always say, like, if you don't like to work, production's not for you. If you do, there is a way to make good money working very hard and then having flexible time, because you get to choose what you work on and when you work.
Sure.
Another thing that I'm learning more and more is the YouTube generation, right? There's so much money to be made on YouTube. It is new for me. I'm trying to learn how all of that stuff works and, like, how to maximize appearance and perception and turn that into equitable dollars. But people do it every day. Some of the most successful people that exist right now in our generation are YouTubers. They're buying houses in the hills. They're more successful than doctors
it's
and
crazy.
Lawyers. So that's very doable. I mean, we all have phones now that have the capability of insane cameras. Find a niche and see and try it, right? I feel like I'm not someone who's very technically versed, but I'm always trying. Like, I'm curious. I want to learn. And the more I try and the more I learn, better I get at it, then more I want to do it, because now I'm learning something new. So I think the wanting to learn and the ability to stay curious are the most valuable asset for anybody.
Curiosity is such a powerful one, because it leads to better communication. It leads to more growth. Exactly as you said, it's like a portal to answers. And also to what you were sharing before, how you've developed a network of individuals that you now, first you started out with, I'm going to get into doing production work as well, and how that opened so many other creative doors for yourself. And in some ways, it's like, you create doors for yourself to continue to open, and it drives you in a different direction that just opens up a whole new brand new house of opportunity. What would you say the favorite thing about yourself is?
Can you repeat the question? You froze for a minute.
Yes, of course. Same on the other end. We're having not the best weather here in LA today, so even the internet is like, nope, it's Monday. My question was, what your favorite thing about yourself is?
Oh, wow.
And why?
Only one? Man, I have so many great things I love about me. Like, I'm a really good friend to anyone. I'm really caring. I'm super fun. Like, people really, like, say they hate spending time alone. I'm like, I could be alone for a long time. Sometimes I have to remind myself that I need to leave the house. Like, I am fully, yeah, I'm like, I'm fully entertained. And I think in dating, that's the hard thing, you know, because, like, number one thing about dating and life in general is, like, somebody you want to spend time with. And I'm so content spending time with me that I'm like, somebody's going to be as much fun as me, if not more fun than me, and that's hard. You know,
that's
so
a
I'll
good
say those are like the ones that come up to my, you know, to mind.
You have a very relatable personality and you're very warm. That's what I picked up immediately from you. And that's very inviting, which has people attracting to you for sure. But it's also that confidence of, like you said, I'm self-entertained. And when you're content with yourself and content in a way that's not, I don't want to grow anymore, but content, like, I've got what I need. I'm sourcing it from the inside. You're not looking and searching from the outside for anything more. So it just becomes, is this cherry on top? Does this add to my life? And I love how you put that. You're like, I'm just self-entertained because I'm the same way. One of the first things my husband and I said to each other, we were like, we're glad that we don't have a lot of other things going on because we're both just like, we're here and we're just like focused. Sometimes it's like, Sarah, get outside the house, go do something, go meet a friend, go to Soho, go do something. Because it's true. It's like I get enveloped in stuff like we're doing even right now and how we can connect with one another. How would you want, what's the legacy that you want to leave behind in the world?
You know, people talk a lot about legacy and how it's important. Like, no one cares. Everybody's going to die and you're going to be like dead. I mean, think about the greats, right? I mean, all the greats we really care about still is science because it's still relevant to life. You know, Newton and like Einstein. Sure, those people created laws of physics that we follow because it's the world. But when it comes to the arts, like, no one cares. And I really just keep saying to everyone, like, this is not, like, heart surgery. Everybody's so serious about creating so high concept art, whatever. I'm like, you're going to be dead and no one's going to remember. Look at the biggest actors, the biggest creators, the big-time directors. I mean, Citizen Kane was one of the best movies of all time. No one even talks about that anymore. Mm. So it comes, now it's all about YouTube 10-second videos or whatever it is. So, you know, when you think about a legacy, I just want to enjoy my life. Mm. I'm more important about creating a life that I can enjoy now than something to leave behind when I'm dead. Because when I'm dead, I don't want to leave anything behind. You know what I mean? If I have kids, great. You're going to get something, I don't know, maybe a house, maybe not. Maybe I'll spend it all. You know, go build it yourself. But it's just a point of, like, I'm more concerned, and what I really want is spend the time that I have in life doing the thing that I love and be able to live the quality of life I want to live. That's what matters to me.
It's so powerful. I love that you shared that. And even the, hate me or not for saying this one, but what you will be leaving behind is about living a passionate life, one that you are just fully enjoying and embodying. And I think that's a leader at that point where you're leaving the examples of living well. That's the way I like to think on it. And I agree with you. It's we're not curing cancer, and I can say that being a cancer survivor. So, like, we're not curing cancer. We're not doing, like you said, heart surgery. So it's just, how are you waking up and enjoying? That's freedom. You know, that's true freedom. Luciana, what do you have coming up next? What are you working on, and what's on the near horizon for you for projects?
Yeah, I'm so happy the strike is over. Let's hope it stays that way. The business is back up. We're auditioning again. I think I found a new set of excitement for play. So I've been loving to read the sites that have come my way and the auditions that I've done recently. I have a few projects I've been developing, mostly on the documentary space. I can't really go into a lot of details about them, but I really do focus all my projects and kind of the underdog story. Mm-hmm. I joke if there is a story of somebody who is hated for some reason, I'm like, I want to talk to them. I want to see why people are not really down with them. And it's usually someone who just kind of went for it and everybody's not okay with that. So I tend to stay with stories about female, you know, driven stories, people of color, the underdog, people who are trying to overcome or overcame. I want everything that I make to be inspiring, to be in somewhat, not just entertaining, but inspiring some kind of way. So that's kind of what I gravitate towards. And as you know, I'm working on my podcast, Incessantly Seeking. Give it a listen. Right, it's all about wellness. We talk about mental health. We talk about love and relationships. We talk about a lot of breakup drama, if that's your thing. And, you know, I'm now integrating other aspects like intention, manifestation, health. It's really about what are the things that we're chasing, you know? I feel like you say that this is really grounded, and I spent a lot of time of my life chasing things that didn't matter, incessantly seeking for something that never came, that was always outside of me. And I realized, like, life just goes, and you just don't enjoy it. So that's how the podcast started, and I spend my time talking to great people like you, and they have really interesting stories that hopefully inspire people to go out there and do whatever it is they want to do. Because guess what? Even the people you care about or they think about you are going to be dead, and they're probably going to be dead before you or while you're dead. So it won't matter. Like, stop wasting time caring about whoever is going to say what. You know, sure, do I care about what my mom says? I do. Am I not going to do it? No, I'm probably just going to hide it from her so it doesn't hurt her feelings. I'm still going to do it. You know what I mean? So it comes to a point that, so like, true. It doesn't matter, you know?
So
that's
true.
The biggest lesson.
It's how everybody's, like, 95% of the time, everybody's in their own head thinking about their own selves anyway. So
yes.
What difference? And here we are over here, like, did they really like do they think of it? Oh. And it's like even with casting directors, they want us to win. They want us to be the answer so
right.
they can be done and go home. And we're over here like, oh, did they not like me? Am I like, it's like, maybe I'm too tall and I'm not blonde, or I look like their ex. So it's just poo-poo for me. But in any case, Luciana, we're going to link your podcast, your website, all of your social media links below in the description. It's a joy to talk with you. And it's just refreshing because of your honesty, your authenticity, your truth. But it's a powerful message that you're sharing. So definitely check out her podcast, Incessantly Seeking, and everything you have going on. I mean, you're a powerhouse for the documentaries, the TV series, the acting that you're doing. I'm thrilled that our paths have overlapped and crossed. So thank you so much for taking the time to be here on Never Settle today.